Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lynn S. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Today is Thursday, February the 12th, 2026, and we're continuing our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter, There is a Solution, on page 19. And we're starting with the first paragraph, None of Us Makes a Soul Vocation. And today we're reading two paragraphs, ending with That Which Has Been So Freely Given Us. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Bev M., the 12 Traditions, and Marie M., and readers of the text, Martha Z., Susan S.H., and Wendy M. The reference numbers for yesterday, Wednesday, February the 11th, the 7 a.m. meeting is 23201. That's 23201. And the 10 a.m. meeting, 23202. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strengths, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And this morning, Bev M. is going to read the 12 steps for us. Good morning, Bev. Bev, please press star 1 to unmute.
Hi, this is Bev M. in Wisconsin. Sorry about that. Gratefully recovered compulsive overeater. Here are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to be of service.
Thank you, Bev M. And today, Anne Marie M. is going to read our 12 traditions. Good morning, Anne Marie.
Good morning, Lynn. Good morning, everyone. This is Anne Marie M., the 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership, OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, for our public relations policy, a public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Anne-Marie M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. So today we're resuming our study of the Big Book. We are in the chapter There is a Solution on page 19, the first paragraph, None of Us Makes a Soul Vocation. And today we're reading two paragraphs ending with That Which Has Been So Freely Given Us. Martha Z, would you start us off, please? Good morning, Martha.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you for your loving service. This is Martha Z. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater by the grace of God from outside of Philadelphia. None of us makes a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. All of us spend much of our spare time in the sort of effort which we're going to describe. A few are fortunate enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to the work. If we keep on the way we're going, there's little doubt that much good will result, but the surface of the problem would hardly be scratched. Those of us who live in large cities are overcome by the reflection that close by, hundreds are dropping into oblivion every day. Many could recover if they had the opportunity we have enjoyed. How then shall we present that which has been so freely given us? Good morning, my friends in recovery. This page is probably my favorite in this chapter. I love it. I want to start with, we feel that elimination of our, I'm going to say, compulsive overeating is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. I'm just going to take each of those things and talk about them. So at home, I am so grateful. I really do feel like I have the best possible relations with. I have two daughters that I have really good relationships with, and it is really only because of recovery. And a husband that we've been married for 47 and a half years, and same thing. Very grateful for that. Occupation, we are supposed to be retired. We've been helping our elderly parents. My mom is 101, and I'm her care coordinator, and it's extremely challenging. And but when I go, I want to have a good attitude, and I always do the step down prayer, and I say, show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Help me to only love. So I want to bring some light there when I go. My brother lives there and has anxiety and depression. So, and he says, things are always better when you're here. So that makes me feel good. Affairs, about a week ago, I fell down the basement steps, and I am very injured right this second. However, I am so grateful because when I went, I was really praying, and I was calm and helpful with, you know, the people that were there, and I felt really good about being connected to what we're talking about, you know, practicing it in all our affairs. And one last quick story. So 10 years ago when we were going to Virginia Beach, my husband said, I think I want to go. So we're getting ready to go, and me, who's always worried about what everybody thinks, say to him, well, you know, if they say to you, what would you say if they asked me what I'm really like or what I'm like at home? And he said, what you see is what you get. And I thought, oh, so that's what I'm really trying for. I'm trying to be that person that I am with you guys. It's easy to be there for you guys, but everywhere else I am. And I'm so grateful for recovery. I'm about to, by the grace of God, on Sunday, have my 37th anniversary of recovery anniversary, and I am so grateful. I am, you know, so it works. It really does. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Martha Z, for getting us started. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Rivka R., Maryland.
Nancy P.
Kelly S.
Robin P. in Tennessee.
Okay, let me tell you who I heard. Rivka R., Nancy P., Kelly EYS, and Robin P. Anybody else?
Harlan G.
Kathy R.
Okay, I got Harlan and Kathy and Colleen. There, we got a lineup. Thank you, everybody. Let me just repeat who I got. Rivka R., Nancy P., Kelly EYS, Robin P., Harlan G., Kathy, and Colleen. Great lineup. Thank you, everybody. Good morning, Rivka. Would you like to start us off, please?
Thanks, Lynn. Good morning. It's Rivka R., gratefully recovered, compulsive overeater in Maryland. And thank you, Martha, for that wonderful lead share. I also wanted to talk about a much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. So the elimination of my destructive eating is but a beginning. And for decades, that's all I wanted. And just let me eat normally and be thin. Like, I wanted to be thin in the worst way, like, because, you know, being thin meant being loved and wanted and successful and happy and admired and have value. I mean, it was like the most important thing. You know, I would have arrived. But that never happened. And every time, you know, I saw a woman who I knew that lost weight, like I had to find out how she did it. You know, one woman told me she drank a lot of water, and another woman told me she took a walk after dinner every night. And I'm like, no strategies ever worked for me. And then there was one woman who I hadn't seen in many years, and she looked like she'd lost 100 pounds. And I didn't even say hi. I just said, how? And she took me to a meeting in Manhattan at the time that really worked the steps, and that was my first experience of cessation from compulsive overeating. But real recovery, after many, many years in and out, you know, which had to include the more important demonstration of our principles in our respective homes, did not happen until I came to Vision in 2020. You know, that's when I became willing to surrender and really hear what the big book is saying, that God is everything or he's nothing. What's my choice to be? You know, I had loads of principles and values before I came to Vision, but I couldn't demonstrate these principles because I hadn't worked the steps in a way that dislodged my self-centeredness. You know, I couldn't be a good mother when I was semi-comatose on the couch, and I couldn't be a loving wife when my husband talked to me, he touched me and all I felt was shame. You know, in our home, I was still in such a state of a drive to control and a drive to be a victim and resentful and fearful. It was like I'd pulled a thick blanket over my head and I couldn't see the light, you know. Now at least I'm aware, like if I go under that blanket, I don't have to suffocate under there anymore. Like, you know, what is so absolutely essential to be able to live in the present moment is free. Air is free. God is free. And this program is free. And that frees me to become the person who can demonstrate these godly principles in my home and affairs. And I'm so relieved, and so are all those people around me. So have a blessed day, everybody. I pass.
Thank you, Rivka R. from Maryland. Next up, we have Nancy P., followed by Kelly EYS. Hey, Nancy.
Hey, Lynn. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Nancy P., recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. So two things here. One, if we keep on the way we are going, there's little doubt that much good will result, but the surface of the problem would hardly be scratched. I mean, that is probably the truest thing, at least for today, that I can think of that's in this book. Had I known what was in store for me beyond just putting food down, perhaps I would have done it a lot sooner. But, you know, I did what I did, and I am who I am, so I did it when I did it. And my life continues to expand and become impossibly more joyful each and every day. But today, you know, I was talking to a friend. I was gone for a couple of weeks. My husband and I went to the UK for some business things. And I was talking to a friend yesterday, and I said, you know, there were a lot of big feelings around this trip. And, you know, I'm agnostic, so I don't ever say ask for help in the way that others do, but I'm more all about surrender. And so, you know, what I've learned is the more that I surrender, the more space there is in my soul and in my brain to let the things that I need rush in like waves, you know, on the shore. That the more I surrender, the more space there is for the things that I need in my life to live a life of sane and happy usefulness, the more room there is for that stuff to come in and take over. And, you know, to me, I learned something crucial, which is, you know, I like to have a plan. I like to know where I start, you know, keep my eye on the ball, where I'm going to be, what the steps are, what do I need to do, make a list, do all this stuff, and multitask. You know, I do a lot of that. I have done a lot of that. And it's really exhausting. And, you know, what I learned was that over the course of, you know, certainly the past 8 years and counting, but especially in situations like this trip that we took, that real recovery means that I can go to bed at night and not have, you know, what I want distract me from what the reality is. And, you know, experiencing the joy of freedom from obsession around stuff. And so today, I was thinking about this morning because I'm still jet-lagged early this morning. Today, I'm not focused. In fact, the only thing that I look at is my feet. And I determine if they're facing forward and moving. And that's all I care about because so far, you know, since I recovered after decades of not being recovered, so far, just keeping my eye on my feet and making sure they're moving in the right direction is all I need. And the other thing that I wanted to just touch on very briefly is how then shall we present that which has been so freely given us? I was told by my excellent sponsor, who is not my friend and won't ever be my friend, but she's an excellent sponsor. She said, just the way that it was presented to you, just the way that it was presented to me. And so that's what I try to do to people when they call me. And I have never been more happy in my entire life than I am right at this minute. And it's for everybody. And because if it's for me, it's for everybody. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Nancy P. from Massachusetts. Kelly EYS, it's your turn, followed by Robin P. Hi, Kelly.
Hey, Lynn. Good morning. I just love you to death. It is Kelly EYS, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater and bulimic in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Glad to be able to share on this paragraph. A lot of people know I love this paragraph. It was life-changing for me. I've been in these rooms for decades, and like was previously shared, some wonderful shares already. And interesting that the people who shared have all been around for a while, and we all took a while. So here we are. Elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. However, it is a beginning, guys. We have to put the food down, right? We have to. Elimination of our compulsive overeating behaviors and alcoholic foods is a beginning. So I have to put that food down. And like it was shared earlier, that's what I came here for years. I just wanted to stop the insanity. I was over 100 pounds overweight. Well, when I first came in, I was 20 pounds underweight, binging and purging all the time, you know, relapsing, over 100 pounds overweight several times. I just wanted the insanity to stop, right? But a much more important demonstration of our principle lies in our respective homes, occupation, and affairs. What? You mean I got to be different? I got to change? That's not what I came here for. Well, guess what, guys? Food is not the problem. We know that. The behaviors are not the problem. Problem is my inability to do life, have any kind of effective relationships, to show up as a better person. And the only power that's going to give me that is a higher power. And that's the whole reason we're working this, right? I'm putting down the food. I'm working these steps in a connection with God. Because not only I lack the power to stop eating and stay stopped, I lack the power to be different, to change my heart. I don't know how to show up this way, right? But God and these principles and you guys, you know, it's like, how then shall we present, which has been so freely given, is, you know, I come here, I hear you guys share not only that you put the food down and you have neutrality, but your hearts are changing. You're different people. And today I have that to share. I put the food down. I'm showing up different. You know, it's not easy. It is so freaking hard. My wife is sick, you guys. I'm in the medical field, and I struggle because she has a freaking man flu, and I have to be loving and kind, so I pray. I put my hand on my heart. I ask God just to help me show up loving and kind, and I do different things. It's like I put the food on the scale. God gives me neutrality, right, but I have a part. So today I ask God, how can I show up and be loving and kind? What can I do for her, right? You know, and then I go to work and I'm gossiping or I'm character assassinating. I stop and I ask God, how can I bring the light into the darkness? How can I be different? I fall short daily, but that's why I continue this work. That's why I go to God. That's why we have 10 steps. That's why we have each other. Most importantly, that's why I have God, and I can only get God through this work. With that, I pass. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Kelly EYS from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Robin P., good morning, followed by Harlan G.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you so much for your service. I'm Robin P., and I'm a very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater currently in Franklin, Tennessee. And on my way to New York City and this weekend. And, you know, I'm so grateful beyond words. You know, I feel like I keep doing my best to heal physically, emotionally, and spiritually every day, one day at a time. And, you know, and it's so important, and the steps and the tools, and all of you give me the solutions for what I need to be happy, joyous, and free, and trudge that road together of happy destiny. And, you know, I love that it says here that much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. And, you know, so I started on Broadway when I was younger, in my 20s and 30s, and
I became an inventor, then I retired in Costa Rica, and God said, you don't retire your gift. And I wasn't supposed to just go retire. And so I had an audition this, I'm flying this weekend to New York, and I have an audition with people flying from London. It just feels so miraculous. One day at a time showing up, you know, gratefully with 10 years of abstinence by God's grace, and showing up to be of service in all my affairs, you know. And we'll see. We'll see what's God's will, you know. It's just that I'm supposed to show up abstinently and spiritually fit, and then let God do the rest. And trust the results to God. You know, I take the actions and God shows the results. I don't get in his business. He doesn't get in my business. I'm supposed to row. He's supposed to guide. And whatever way is supposed to happen, you know, and I used to sabotage so much with food. And I get to just show up abstinently and shine, let God shine through me and get out of the way. And also, throughout the preparation for that, not just, you know, stay in each moment, in this moment, one day at a time, 1 minute at a time. And about my relationship with my husband, you know, we got divorced. We were married for 11 years. We went through so much really hard stuff, and we didn't have support. And we got divorced after 11 years. And, you know, he asked me to go to church with him on Christmas, and I heard God say, Merry Christmas, this is my gift to you. And so I went, we started dating, we moved in together. I proposed a second time. Thankfully, he said yes. And we got remarried. We didn't plan this part during the California wildfires of 2018 in Los Angeles. And our friend's house, where we were having our wedding reception, burned down.
Time, please.
Thank you. The night before our wedding, I'll just quickly finish this sentence. And our honeymoon resort burned down. We had our wedding reception and our honeymoon at our church rectory, and we have been so happily married, both of us in recovery, ever since all these years. Thank you so much. God bless everybody with a really blessed abstinent day.
Thank you, Robin P. from Tennessee. Now we have Harlan G. from Arizona. Good morning, Harlan.
Thank you, Lynn, for your service. Please don't be gentle with your reminder as I'm outdoors walking. For 47 years, I heard people say something to me that I could not apply effectively because it's not true. They said abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. Not for me, thank you. Abstinence is like the entrance ramp to the highway. Abstinence is the entrance ramp in that it is required, or I cannot get on the broad highway. I cannot trudge the road of happy destiny if I'm not abstinent. But abstinence is the first half of the first step, and that there is a much more important demonstration of these steps. When he says principles, he's talking about the steps. He was taught not to use the same word again and again and again. And what's the most important thing is my spiritual condition. It says on page 85 that my spiritual condition, that's the key to my life. Abstinence alone will not get me where I want to be. Abstinence alone does not treat this disease. So abstinence being the most important thing in my life, without exception, is true if I'm at the pain way. It's true if I'm at the paying way. Now, things happened to Bill. He learned, he grew, he adapted. In the summer of 1935, he was pushing for paid missionaries to travel about the country, proselytizing AA's way of life. And this was the first chapter written, There Is a Solution. The second chapter written is more about alcoholism. These were the first chapters written. This was written in the autumn, late summer of 1937. And by then he realized that paid missionaries was not the way to go. He learned, he grew, he adapted. How fortunate are we to be able to go about as an avocation? And each one of us is a message. Some of us are a cautionary tale. Some of us are a beacon of hope. But as we go about, we can reach people that no one else can reach. Nothing ensures immunity from drinking like intensive work with other alcoholics. We find that on page 89. And as we go about our lives, God puts in our paths people who need what this is, and we are that messenger at times. We may be the only copy of the big book that person will ever see.
Time, please.
And so it is. Okay, Lynn, thank you very much for your service. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Harlan G. from Arizona. Kathy, good morning. You're up. I don't have your initial or where you're from, so if you could give us that, that would be wonderful. Welcome, Kathy.
Yes, thank you. Hello, this is Kathy R. from Massachusetts, and some great shares so far. I'm a compulsive overeater. I love the lead share. I love to hear stories, personal stories. When I first came in, I still go to listen to a ton of podcasts and speaker meetings, and just get so much identification from them. So when I read this paragraph, what stood out to me was the line, "We feel the elimination of our compulsive eating is but a beginning." So when I first got into this program, I thought the goal was really just to stop eating, stop binging, lose weight, and then I'd be out of here, you know. But anyway, we all know that didn't happen. Everything would be fine. But the big book tells me that that's only the starting point. And for me, abstinence isn't the goal like I thought it would be. You know, it's the foundation. And that the real work shows up in my home, in my relationships, and, you know, with family and friends and in my community. It's how I treat people when I'm tired or stressed or just not getting my way. It's about practicing these principles in all my affairs, not just in meetings. The real test is how I live when I walk out the door. And that's like even in my most mundane affairs. And I'll just tell a quick little story from yesterday. You know, it's the ability for me to now see the other person's side, what's going on. You know, it's not just all about me anymore. So anyways, I live in Massachusetts, and we're having a pretty good winter up here. And I happen to like winter, thank goodness. But my neighbor is from Miami, and this is her first winter, and we have a plow guy, but for some reason she keeps going out and shoveling. I think she just is kind of, you know, worried about getting to a job and all that, and just never haven't seen this kind of snow. But anyway, so she was up really, really early, like 4:30, I think, and so my dog started barking, of course, and but I could see right away, even though I was tired, that it's not her fault, it's not the dog's fault, it's just, you know, it's just life. There was nothing to be upset about. You know, she's not used to the snow and the amount we're getting. The dogs are protecting the house. And, you know, prior to program, I probably would have been, you know, negative on my tiredness all day and, you know, resentful and just not a nice person to be around. But, you know, I felt kind of bad that we are having a tougher winter than usual this year, and it's her first one. She's from Miami. I mean, that's got to be huge. And I'm grateful that my dogs are such great little protectors. So, you know, like I said, I can see the other person's side now. It makes life so much easier. And I'm grateful to be here to continue learning and growing, and I pass.
Thank you, Kathy R. from Massachusetts. And now we have Colleen. And Colleen, if I could have the initial of your last name, please, and where you're calling from.
Hey, thank you, Lynn. This is Colleen M. from Maryland. Grateful, recovered, compulsive reader. and what a great meeting, so many great shares. And I wanted to focus on the sentences at the beginning as well. We feel that the elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. I had no idea, you know, when I got here that, you know, I just thought the whole problem was with you know, the way I ate and my addiction to the food. I absolutely did not understand at all that the spiritual and emotional aspect of this disease that made me selfish, dishonest, and full of fear. And, you know, getting abstinent is definitely the wake up. And then I started to come to slowly as I continued to do the work and the steps and working with others. And, you know, God started changing my heart and my thought processes. And, you know, I started developing these principles. I started to actually, through the changes that my higher power, I believe, made in me because I showed up abstinent and willing to be the person that I always wanted to be but couldn't be, you know. And these principles, you know, what are my principles? I had to really sit down and list how do I want to look, how do I want to show up in a relationship? You know, how do I want to look in my relationship with my husband, with my kids, with my you know, siblings, with friends? You know, I really had to define those things. And I'm not capable of doing any of those. But what I am capable of doing is showing up on a daily basis and ask God, what's your will for me today? And I do that in all of my affairs, my homes, my occupations. And the other sentence that really stood out to me was, if we keep on this way we are going, there is little doubt that much good will result. And I can say that I have found that to be true. The more that I continue to do this work, the more that I go to my higher power on a daily basis, the more I build that relationship, the more I open myself up to look at, you know, honestly, you know, am I selfish? Am I afraid? Am I being dishonest? Then it allows, you know, not only God, but, you know, sometimes other people in the program that can be honest with me to help me see what's the next step. And it's miraculous. This program is absolutely miraculous. And I would love to give it to everybody. I think we all could use it. Not everybody is ready for it. And that has to be okay with me as well. But am I ready to share it when I have the opportunity? The last sentence, how then shall we present that which was just given so freely to us? I present it because I'm willing to do it when I'm asked.
Time, please.
Thank you. When I feel God's nudge, and I still try to stay aware. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Colleen M. from Maryland. For those of us who might have come on the line a little bit later this morning, just to let you know where we are, we're continuing our study of the Big Book, and we're in the chapter, There is a Solution. On page 19, starting with the first paragraph, None of Us, and ending with two paragraphs down, That which has been so freely given us. So the line is now open for sharing on what we just read. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It really does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Janice, PM.
New Jersey.
Okay, if you can hang on a second, please. I heard Janice PM, and that was all. Who else was there?
Ginger C.
Okay. I got Janice and Ginger. Who else, please?
Cheryl L., Florida.
Okay, room for more.
Susan,
Colleen?
Susan, Georgia.
Okay, hang on. I heard Susan, and then was it Eileen or
Helene?
Eileen?
No, it's Helene. H.
H E L E N E. Okay. So I've got Janice PM, Ginger C, Cheryl L, Susan, Helene. Anyone else? No? Okay. Well, let's go with that lineup and we'll see how we do time wise. Janice PM, good morning to you.
Oh, and good morning to you, Kelly. Thank you so much for your service. My name is Janice PM, and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. You know, the very this is a paragraph that confirms what the necessity for me to recover, not to just lose weight, because I've lost weight thousands of times. And, you know, I've been in the program and I used to sit at meetings and they used to say, oh, you got to come to meetings. Meetings make it, you know. And, of course, I found out that the number of meetings I go to do not make it, but the steps I take make it. And it says none of us. That means zero. I know there's not one person in here that doesn't have a job in the beginning. Or you're retired. If you're retired like I am, maybe it could be a soul vocation. But none of us makes a soul vocation of this work, nor, this is what I like, nor do we think it would be effective if we did, because that's not the goal either. That's not how we change. If we get, oh, we do this day in and day out, and we don't, you know, have a job or whatever. We do what we can. The elimination of the drinking is but a beginning. I thought it was the beginning and the end. That's really how I thought. And I couldn't understand when they used to say, you know, if you want what we have, then do what we do. And I used to sit there and say, but I don't really want what some of these people have. One's too thin, one's still too heavy. You know, I would be very critical with my character defects. And so I didn't think anything of it because I really didn't get what my problem was, that I had a physical allergy, a mental obsession, and a spiritual malady. See, they didn't talk about the spiritual malady. So the emphasis was on the food plan, the meeting to go to, the sponsor to get. Because there's certain, I love the demonstration. What's a demonstration? Well, a demonstration to me is I see what you do. You know, I see what the end result is. So here's a little that we always hear, that actions speak louder than words. And I say, let your words teach, and let your actions speak. You know, I live in a home that has 12 steps to get into it. So if I'm on the first step and say, okay, that's it, I can get in the house, I can't. I have to go 11 more steps. And that's the picture I see. I always thought of, in order to get in my house for the goal, whatever the goal
time
is.
Time, please, Janice.
Okay, then that is where I will stop, because abstinence doesn't give me a spiritual awakening. Thank you very much. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you, Janice PM from Massachusetts. Now we have Ginger C, followed by Cheryl L. Good morning, Ginger.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you so much for your service. This is Ginger C, a real compulsive overeater. And so grateful to be back with you all on this line. Oh, my goodness, you guys. You know I've been in a hellish relapse. And I'm just so grateful to wake up. Of course, we all wake up abstinent, but I am out of the food, and I've never felt better. So thank God it works if you work it. And I just love this. You know, none of us make a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. And we feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning, a much, much, much more important demonstration is these principles that lie before us in our respective homes, actions, and affairs. And, You know, this is the gift of relapse that I can share with you all, is that I have learned so much, and I'm showing up in a much different way today. And when I first got sober out of the food, by the grace of God, in 2015, man, I just came home, and this sole vocation was to help that next person dying in the food. And all I did was 12-step work. And guess what? It feels good. It gave me the biggest high and helped my self-esteem, because it's always running a little low. And it's actually really selfish, because the most important thing are my children and my husband in the home. They've been missing their mom for all those times that she was numb and oblivious in the food. And here I am. I felt like a switchboard operator on a telephone, answering all these calls from all these people I didn't even know, and missing, again, the most important people. And I don't have to sponsor 12, 15 people, reading them through the book quickly. You know, it became sort of a sickness, you guys, and Bill Wilson actually wrote an article on it, because he saw the problem in Alcoholics Anonymous as well. So I'm so grateful that I know that my most important connection is God, and I know that working with another, you know, it's immunity, and it will help me with my sobriety. But there's a balance in this. And again, how am I showing up in this home? If you want to see how you're doing, go in the door and ask your most loved ones. You know, they'll tell you the truth. Or how are you showing up at that job and that work? And I'm just amazed, again, because of not eating and because of getting back into this, you know, my job is the best job I've ever had in my entire life. And I'm just blown away. Again, it does begin with putting down the food. But, man, if you're eating and you're in relapse, that's a really hard thing to hear, because you guys told me that over and over. Ginger, just put the food down. And you know what? You just can't put the food down. It's called grace and mercy. And you just pray that that window of opportunity rolls down, because this is fatal, it's progressive, and it gets really bad and really dark. So I am just so grateful to be back.
Time, please.
Yes, thank you, Lynn, so much. I love you all, and I hope you have a very happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, Ginger C. Cheryl L., good morning. It's your turn, followed by Susan. Hi, Cheryl.
Good morning, Lynn. Good morning, fellows. This is Cheryl L. calling from Florida this morning. So grateful to be on the meeting again. I really missed you all when I was away. This paragraph speaks really loudly to me, beginning with, none of us makes a sole vocation of this work. You know, I retired from full-time work on March 28th of last year, and immediately took myself off on a women's retreat weekend. And my question to God was, what is your purpose for me? And the reason I can ask that question is because I have this program, and because I know that, you know, I'm not, you know, retiring does not mean sitting idly. Retiring for me means, how do I use my gifts? How do I use my experience, you know, to help another sick and suffering compulsive overeater, or another sick and suffering person, period. You know, and when I came away from that weekend, what I had as an answer was, you throw yourself into this program and you try to help, you try to be of service, you know, to those who are still out there, and you be of service to your family. And, you know, the great benefit of doing that is that I have, you know, I wrote down this morning in my morning meditation and my quiet time that I have people in my life who love and care about me. I have people in my life who actually seek my guidance, seek my advice, and I can share my experience with them. I can share what is coming from the depths of my heart. You know, and what a beautiful gift that is, that gift of feeling that sense of belonging. And I think that's what I was always looking for. I just wanted to fit in. I just wanted to belong. You know, at the very end of this reading today, it says, how then shall we present that which has been so freely given us? So part of me focuses on the freely given. In the AA 12 and 12, it talks about freely we have received, freely give. And so I stop and think about all of the hours that have been given to me, you know, by sponsors, by others in the program to share with me their experience, strength, and hope. And so I should at least be as willing to give as they give. And the other thing I just want to wrap up with then is that, you know, my education in this program just continues. You know, I can't stay stuck in my recovery of yesterday. You know, maintenance of my condition today, maintenance of my spiritual condition today means that I have to keep learning. I have to keep studying. I have to keep listening. And I have to keep sharing because I know that there is somebody out there who needs to hear, you know, what I have to share. And that's on God's time. It's not on my time. So I have so much more I could share, but I don't know how much time I have left. So thank you so very much for listening and have a blessed day, everyone.
Thank you, Cheryl L. from Florida. Susan, good morning. You're up, followed by Helene. And Susan, if we could have the initial of your last name, please, and where you're calling from.
Yes, good morning. This is Susan P., P like in Peter, from Georgia. And I'm very grateful for your service and grateful that I have the courage to be on this line because there's a lot of recovery, and I don't have that long-term recovery, but I am abstinent. What I want to talk about is this practice these principles in all our affairs. And what comes to mind is John Kay and relapse and the lies we tell ourselves. For the last perhaps 3 weeks or a month, I've been unusually busy with family issues. I have a brother who is incapacitated because of smoking and morbid obesity, and I spent a few weeks schlepping him to doctors. And then after he got in the hospital, I got a call from my daughter in Tallahassee that she's in the hospital with severe kidney infection. So I go racing down to Tallahassee. And the lie I told myself is someone talked about the balance. So I use that as an excuse not to be really clean with my abstinence. I was abstinent. I was reporting my food to my sponsor, but it wasn't as clean as it should be because I just was not focused on program. And I'm reminded of the principle with, you know, in the airplane, and you got to take care of yourself first. And the lie I tell myself is that I'm really spiritual because I'm doing all these things to help my family. And don't get me wrong, I'm ecstatically grateful that I have the health and the strength to do all this. I'm 77 years old. I spent much of my life with morbid obesity, although I'm down 105 pounds. And God has been incredibly good to me by the fact that I have good health and strength and I'm able to do all this stuff. But I really need to focus on my program. And a very dear program just said, you know, go to meetings, which I had been neglecting, and write. So I wrote this morning just a letter to God to connect to God. And I just want to share a really beautiful experience I had when I was in Tallahassee. I was at a restaurant eating dinner, and my server was I was on the FSU campus. And this young server, a senior in college, who was a spiritual person, I could tell by what he was wearing around his neck. And we got into a discussion, and he took my hand, and he says, I'd like to pray for you. And I can't tell you the details of what he said, but he prayed for me. And I'm telling you, it just really had a profound positive influence on me that someone, a perfect stranger, cared enough to pray for me. And as a result, I've been abstinent. And for today and for the last number of days, I've been free of the
time,
compulsion
please.
Of the disease. So I just want to share that I'm grateful to be abstinent. And I do agree that I have to be abstinent first, but not stop there. And I'm grateful for all God's blessings for me, which are numerous. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Susan P. from Georgia. And Helene, we've got about a minute left. Would you like that minute? It's yours.
Absolutely.
Yay.
Good
morning.
I'm Helene L. from New York City. And I've been abstinent 51 years, and a day at a time, and abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception, and I want to explain that. I have to be abstinent in order to move forward and gain the other knowledge that I need to be responsible in my life. Because in AA and stuff like that, they talk about being mocus. And if I'm not abstinent, I'm walking through my life in a mocus way. But abstinence is important, but it's the first step. Then I need, as hard as it is, to do the work and look at me in relation to what I do in my life. It's easy to point a finger at someone else. And people, I mean, it's a crazy world these days, and everyone is off the wall, truthfully. But if I don't take responsibility for my part, because there's always, when two people are involved, there's two people who have responsibility. And if I don't look at my part, I don't grow. So number one, I've got to be abstinent. I can't play around with food. I have boundaries. I stay away, like they say in the big book, from that first compulsive bite, which is to me like taking a drink. And then I can look at my part. And I live a good life these days. That's
time,
it.
Please. Thank you, Helene L. from New York City. And thank you to everyone who shared, and thank you to Team Thursday. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for this morning's meeting, Thursday, February the 12th, the 7 a.m. meeting, is 23204. That's 23204. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the prayer. And this morning, Susan S.H. is going to read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Good morning. This is Susan S.H. in St. Mary's, Ohio. I'm a compulsive eater recovered today. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you